Good afternoon, fellow Patriots. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of Free Washington, Spokane Valley, in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. And once again, this is the year we make freedom a reality, because our hope is not in man, but in Jesus Christ. And we can't end in prayer. We must also move to action. And as Jeremiah 6:16 reminds us, stand at the crossroads and look, ask for the ancient paths, ask where the good way is and walk in it, and you will find rest for your souls. Well, folks, I'm glad to be back from Olympia. Finally done with special session this year, 2016, and got a lot of exciting news on that. What really happened behind the scenes, and some bizarre stuff going on here in Spokane Valley, but we'll get to that here in a bit. Now from the front, your daily intelligence briefing. On the international front, Russia has moved Iskander missile launchers into Syria. Now, these are nuclear-capable missile launchers that they have moved into Syria now, and it's being watched by a lot of people, but this is after they pulled out, supposedly. It's like they moved in a deterrent, even though they pulled out, because they're having financial problems keeping that army in Syria, and this is a deterrent in case anybody tries to get wise. That's the message that I would think is coming across from this. But Debka File, if you don't know that website, D-E-B-K-A, has some great information on what goes on in the Middle East. The reason I know that is because when I was in the Middle East, I used Debka File quite a bit, because they actually would put out the accurate news of what was going on the ground there, compared to what we were getting via intelligence reports, etc. But this is their big story today, and I think something we need to continue to watch. This isn't, you know, Syria, while it's not in the headlines, is not going away anytime soon. Also on the international front, once again, the trade gap with China is the largest ever, over $365 billion. What are we doing here in the United States to rebuild our manufacturing, to rebuild our infrastructure here, so that we can actually begin exporting again? We can begin building and creating jobs here in America. I mean, clearly it can't continue this way. Now, there's an interesting thing going on with the stock market. It's the biggest comeback since 1933. That doesn't really give me a lot of hope. If we're having that kind of dramatic downswings and upturns, that is an indicator in and of itself of a dramatic economic downturn and an eventual economic collapse. Now, collapse, again, being defined, and not in the way that some people define it, is if only a war could actually bring an economic collapse, but being defined as dramatic unemployment, being defined as a complete revamping of the currency system, being defined as massive amounts of businesses shuttering their doors. That's what we're talking about here. And it just continues day by day to look that way. And it's interesting, this came on the day that Federal Reserve Chairwoman says that we're already in a recession. So they're admitting that that's the case. You remember a couple, 3 months ago, that wasn't, well, no, we're not in recession. We're not, there's no problems. And now they're admitting it. So on the international front, just keep our eyes on China and this trade gap, and look for ways that we can actually turn America around here, where we can actually expand business. That's what we should be looking at. Also on the international front, and one of the more interesting stories I've seen in a long time, on Drudge Report, an international elections rigger. Okay, this guy's job was literally to rig elections in South America, and he tells his story for the first time. And it was through electronic hacking that he did it. So all these people up here that say, oh, we can do computers and everything, there's no problem. This guy's been doing it for years. You got to read his story. It's on Drudge Report right now. This guy literally rigged elections through computers. So, folks, people that tell me, oh, this couldn't happen, this guy's been doing it for years. So all those people kind of lose immediate credibility. just immediate credibility because the safeguards are similar, so-called safeguards, are similar to what was being used in South America. So anyway, check that story out. Very fascinating. On the national front, once again, Hillary Clinton is not indicted and going to be just interviewed by the FBI director. They had to give her investigators a security clearance because theirs wasn't high enough just to do the investigation. Folks, that alone is a breaking of the law. I remember in the military, if you were sitting on a secure internet computer, Cypronet computer, and you were literally leave it unattended, you could get in trouble for it, let alone sending private stuff that would be secret, top secret. And she was doing it all on her private email. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. She is not in jail yet. And folks, that's why I think that she may actually be the one to win this election coming up in November. God forbid. And we need to unite as conservatives, unite as constitutionalists, and we need to get the corruption out of government. And folks, it's not the corrupt people's fault. It's our fault for letting them in there and allowing them to stay in there. And I know there are people listening to Patriot Radio right now that are in positions in government agencies across the state of Washington, probably in some agencies in the United States government. There will come a time when you have to stand up and say, no, that's wrong. We can't continue this corruption. We cannot allow it to stand. And unfortunately, sometimes it's going to have to be maybe even at the price of your career. The founding fathers did it at the price of their lives. And those people in positions right now in government agencies that are in positions to expose stuff should be exposing it. And there's ways to have whistleblowers get information out without any retribution against that whistleblower too. But eventually, we have to stop it. And there are, literally, folks, I get people coming up to me. I get people emailing me, calling me, saying, hey, did you know this is happening? Did you know that's happening? I mean, it is rampant. And we talk about all our problems today. I think I can narrow it down to one, and it's the bureaucrats. Our bureaucrats are not being held accountable. And literally are becoming a government unto themselves. And so when you have somebody like Hillary Clinton who should be in jail and is not, you know, I think it just underscores we have got to do something. We have got to shrink the size of government dramatically, if for no other reason than to shrink the number of bureaucrats and those that are unaccountable. We have to do it because it is so difficult to hold folks accountable today. And if you're listening right now and you're in one of those agencies and you've got information and you don't know who to give it to, message me. Get a hold of me. We've been putting that kind of information out for a while, and my guest today actually has used whistleblowers to great effect to change the system. So This is what we're going to have to do. We're going to have to unite to get this corruption out. And speaking of corruption, let's talk about the mainstream media shifting to the next thing on the national front, and specifically the Oregon Propaganda Bureau, or OPB, or Oregon Public Broadcasting, some people call it. The Oregon Propaganda Bureau put out a story. Literally, they lied. I mean, completely lied in the story, just made stuff up. Now, that shouldn't surprise you because you've seen what the Spokesman Review does, Socialist Review does. So it shouldn't surprise you, but it does surprise some people still. Folks, they don't care if they lie. They literally do not care as long as it furthers their agenda. It's that Machiavellian principle that the end justifies the means. These people will literally lie. They will cheat. They will smear. I mean, my goodness, it doesn't matter if you're Donald Trump or Ted Cruz. The media is hammering you either way. And in Cruz's case, is trying to smear him and his family. And in Trump's case, they're, no pun intended, trying to trump up charges against one of his campaign workers. And I mean, folks, what happened to just reporting the facts? These people are completely lying. I mean, literally, without any compunction, lying because it furthers their agenda. And we've got to call them out on it. And so the Coalition of Western States, we did a couple of articles exposing the Oregon Propaganda Bureau's so-called articles, and also another place called Raw Story. And man, you would have thought we caved in the troll home. We had trolls all over the internet, and they could never rebut the facts. So all they were doing was calling names and doing this stuff and making fun. And that's all they would do. They couldn't rebut it because we had the facts. And we, as God-fearing Christians, as God-fearing Americans, we've got to start looking at the facts. We need to care about the facts, even if they don't. We need to care about the facts. And I've heard Christians out there that have parroted the mainstream media propaganda lies because they did not bother to look up the facts. And folks, we have got to get out of that apathy and look up the facts. It's our duty to do so. Which brings us to Lavoie-Finicum. The FBI is being accused of taking shells from the scene that would prove that the FBI fired on that vehicle. Number two, that vehicle approached the roadblock and was being shot at as it approached the roadblock. The roadblock itself, as I've talked about on the show before, is called a dead man's roadblock. That is a lethal use of force. It's a violation of the Constitution, except in very limited, specific circumstances, none of which Lavoie-Finicum fit in. But on top of that, they shot at the vehicle as it approached a roadblock. Both of those things, just even before he got out of the vehicle, doesn't matter. I've heard Christians say, well, he got out of the vehicle and he said, shoot me. No, it doesn't matter. Irrelevant. Completely irrelevant. Does not matter. What matters is they shot at him for not doing anything wrong at that point. He was en route to see a sheriff, and they knew it, and they set that ambush up, and it was an ambush. The way it was structured was classic military ambush. I've talked to former Army Rangers about this. They concur 100%. And folks, we have evidence as well that they were setting this up a couple days ahead of time. So we need to look at the facts there and say, that's wrong. They violated the law. No one's above the law. We need to hold those people accountable. And the government can't just go shooting people they disagree with. Regardless, it doesn't matter what he said. It does not matter what he said. They did not have the right to kill him. And very candidly, him jumping out and saying, shoot me, and drawing fire away from the vehicle so they didn't kill the women in and the other passengers in that truck is actually kind of heroic that he saved those lives. But as a matter of law, as a matter of constitutional law, they use deadly force without any authority to do so, conclusively proven. No one can argue it. The tape proves it, and they admitted it. We're done. So all this stuff about the media out there, very interesting that you're not hearing them talk about what's going on with the people that have been arrested, where they're issuing them gag orders. They cannot talk about the incident, even though they've been released from prison. What's that about? How come they don't want to talk? Let them talk about it? Perhaps it's because they don't want the truth to get out. On the regional front, very quickly, we're going to talk about what happened in Olympia. Historic 27 vetoes of the governor were overridden by votes of the House of Representatives and the Senate, and the House being the last to vote on it, we were the ones that actually made it conclusively law. When we overrode those vetoes, one of them, industrial hemp, now legal in Washington state, and the governor just a massive smackdown after he vetoed 27 bills out of spite. It was amazing. We haven't overridden a gubernatorial veto, I think, in 20-plus years. Very historic. And to add to the positive news, just today, the governor not wanting to veto any more freedom agenda bills signed two into law today. One, allowing reciprocity and cross-border ATV traffic for Northeast Washington, and I'm sure you all are happy about that. You can go into Idaho, and Idaho can come back into Washington without having new licenses. Also, signing into law today, the governor, I don't even understand, I don't think he understood the importance of this bill, but we have our county auditor here. We also have the Secretary of State, and sometimes the county auditors will send out their name on envelopes during an election year so that they can literally get more name ID and they can help them. Well, this bill bans that practice from happening. County auditors cannot put their name on the outside of the envelopes so that they get more out of doing this. And it's basically a free mailer to everybody in the county. So this bill stops. It's a great freedom agenda bill signed into law today by the governor. We got a couple more coming. And really exciting. We're on the offense now. Looks really good. We have 5 seats up for election this year. It looks like we might be able to take and gain the majority in the House of Representatives in Washington and actually start making freedom even more a reality and continue to get these freedom agenda bills signed into law. On the local front, I want to highlight this very quickly before we get to our guest here. Some bizarre, and I want to underscore this, bizarre accusations flying out in the valley right now against the current Valley City Council, which is doing a phenomenal job. But these rumors are one of them was an editorial published by The Current out in Liberty Lake, which is now owned by Ben Wick, a failed liberal candidate for elected office. And in The Current, they published an editorial that says that somehow Josh Kearns, who is running for county commission, still running for county commission, lost the seat, which he did not. He just was not selected for an appointment. And that the city of Spokane Valley is going to appoint him as the city manager. I mean, it's bizarre. He's running for county commissioner right now. It can't even be possible. He wouldn't even be considered for the position. And they made the same accusation against me that they were somehow maneuvering to get Matt Shea into to be the city manager. It's just bizarre conspiracy theories. And so I did some digging, and I'm tracing these things back, and you want to guess who the common denominator is behind all of these theories, these bizarre, weird theories out there and rumors that are floating? It all came back to one person, Sheriff Knezovich. And once again, he's attacking people, and we have to defend ourselves with the truth, and that's what I'm doing right now. Totally untrue. The city of Spokane Valley and their city council is doing more than any other city council in the state of Washington to expand freedom. And they really are being hammered by this group of people that are super misinformed. And I challenge anybody that's listening today, I will talk to you personally about this. Message me on Facebook. I will talk to you personally about this because these rumors and stuff that are floating are just absolutely not true. 100% not true. And there's a lot more to the story, but we are going to move on to our guest today, and that is The Briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that's been praying for me and Victoria, especially being over there in session. And really, I can't tell you how much that means for so many people to be praying for us, and that's why we're so successful, is because of the grace of God and your prayers. So please, if you get a chance, go to Facebook.com/Patriot Radio US, like the page, share it with your friends and family, and if you want to get more involved in the show, go ahead and message me. It may take me a day or two to get back to you, but I try to go through all of those messages and answer any questions people have. So if you send one, be patient. I'll get back to you. But if you want to get involved, hook up on Patriot Radio and message me there. Well, my guest today is a true freedom fighter, somebody that has been not only fighting the good fight, but has been really successful in getting whistleblowers to come forward and expose some of the corruption in government, especially around property rights. Glenn Morgan with the Citizens Alliance for Property Rights. Glenn, thanks for joining me on Patriot Radio today. How are you doing, my friend?
Man, I'm doing really well, and thank you so much for having me today.
So, well, I just want to get your take real quick on the 27 overrides of the governor. What was your take of that entire situation? It's kind of comical how everything shook out.
Well, first of all, I want to say congratulations. You probably have actually set a new state record, and you should be proud of participating in that. It's pretty rare that you can ever overturn one governor bill, let alone 27 of them all at one time. That's impressive.
Yeah, it was amazing. I just, there were seven, what we just call them Inslee-ites, who were, standing by the governor's side. They voted no on all the overrides. But that was it. That was the big opposition.
Well, you got to like the bipartisanship. I mean, who says bipartisanship is dead in Olympia?
I completely agree, and especially on the hemp bill. I was really excited. You know, it is not the right bill, perfect bill. They didn't take some pretty significant suggestions, but it's a step in the right direction. And it just was good to see something that really is going to expand freedom and allow the growing of hemp back here in Washington again. I was really excited to see that. Did you have any favorite bills that you saw where the veto got overridden?
You know, I didn't have any particular favorites. I think I was more enjoying the spectacle of watching Inslee. Bring the legislature together in opposition against him. And, the Lord works in mysterious ways. And sometimes it takes a guy like Inslee to to bring everyone together. And it was really amusing. I mean, I have never heard a governor so disparaged by staff members who work in the agencies than this one. And it's impressive. He's just found a way to unite everybody, and it's really not so much. I think it's just a lack of respect. I think that really he's just not respected by anyone, I think that was on full display. It was an impressive display. And congratulations for being there. That was historic.
Yeah, it was historic. You know, one of the funnier parts was when he came out afterwards, and he's like, "Oh, this is what I wanted to have happen." You know.
Yeah, I don't think any governor ever said, "I want to be overridden," you know, or "Oh, beat." I mean, it really shows political weakness. That if anything, it's going to make it more likely that a Democrat runs against him. I mean, he's making himself that vulnerable, I think.
Well, I think so too. And then, you know, some of his agencies are just—they're running completely out of control right now. Department of Ecology, probably number one among them, not answering public records requests. And if they do answer, they don't provide all the information, and we find that stuff out later. So if you could, Glenn, can you describe some of the bureaucratic abuse that you're seeing, especially in the property rights arena with Department of Ecology and some of these other agencies that are out there?
Well, the Department of Ecology is, it's always the agency that I get the most complaints about from a property rights perspective from around the state, and that's been true for 6 years. It is the agency that is entirely out of control and totally, you know, I think one thing people have to remember is that it has nothing to do with the environment. This agency may use that as an excuse periodically, but I think an agency will oftentimes define itself, define its priorities by what they celebrate. And if you walk into the lobby of the Department of Ecology today, you're not going to see graphs showing the water getting cleaner or the air getting cleaner, or how any efforts that they're making to clean up the environment. The only graph they have in the lobby of the Department of Ecology today is a graph that shows how many employees they've been able to grow and how many bills they've been able to pass that allows their agency to grow bigger. That's the only chart in the Department of Ecology, celebrating the hiring of more bureaucrats and more legislation that allows them to hire more bureaucrats. And unfortunately, that creates a culture of abuse. And this agency, just to give you an example from a couple weeks ago, one of the senior Department of Ecology employees up in Bellingham prioritized his day going around and actually finding somebody committing the crime of washing a car. As it turns out, it's illegal to wash your car now. They actually fined a fellow up in Bellingham for washing a car. And it's just two employees, a senior-level employee at the Department of Ecology, drove all the way at the end of a dead-end street to find this guy washing his car outside of a storage unit. And he's going to court next month, and he's going to get thousands of dollars in legal costs, and it's a misdemeanor. It's a crime to wash your car. And that was a bill, a local bill, or local legislation, basically ordinances that have been passed all around the state of Washington at the direction of the Department of Ecology. This is how they prioritize their time. These are the things that they're most concerned about, people who might be washing their car outside.
Well, it sounds like we lost our guest there. Department of Ecology completely, I'm joking, of course, completely cut our line off there as we're talking about property rights. But the bottom line is, this is real, folks. The Department of Ecology literally has, they're proud of the fact that they continue to grow the size of their agency, and they continue to grow the size of the bureaucracy and the number of bureaucrats that they have. And you got to understand, let me just give you an example. So the Bureau of Land Management has approximately 9,700 employees. I want to say that again. 9,700 employees. The Bureau of Land Management manages 245 million surface acres of the United States. That's roughly 13% of the landmass of the United States. Okay? 13%. Think about that for a second. Now, on top of that, the Bureau of Land Management manages 700 million subsurface acres of mineral estates, roughly one-third of the mineral resources in the United States. These are from that. These numbers I'm giving you are directly from the Bureau of Land Management's budget justifications for 2017. I pulled it straight out of the document. Give you the pages if you want. In fact, I posted it on the Coalition Western States website. I think I posted it also on my own personal website or personal Facebook page, excuse me. So 700 million subsurface mineral acres, 245 million, excuse me, surface acres is what the BLM manages. Now, 9,700 employees, those folks are not all out in the field doing stuff. Those folks are sitting behind their desks writing rules, regulations, and figuring out what land needs to be acquired and drawing maps to do it. Now, in this new budget that the BLM is requesting, $44 million is supposed to go to land acquisition. Okay? Now, they want to acquire thousands of new acres of private land to turn them into refuges and monuments. And so this whole thing people have been talking about where the BLM goes out there and they capture, you know, they capture and they manage this public land, and it's all public land. Why do you guys hate public land? Why do you want to get rid of public land? It wasn't public land to begin with in a lot of cases. It was private land that was destroyed. Over 100 ranches, I think it was almost 120 ranches, destroyed to make the Mahler Refuge down in Oregon. It was private property, and you know what, folks? They want to do it again in Turnbull, Washington. Right outside of Cheney, there's a Turnbull Wildlife Refuge. I have seen the maps with my own eyes. They have maps literally where they have first priority land acquisition and then secondary priority land acquisition and then tertiary. They literally have these maps that they want, and they have identified the properties, individual properties that they want to grab and destroy to be part of these refuges. And this particular Turnbull Wildlife Refuge And somebody had the audacity to say that that was not government overreach. My goodness. When government is stealing and taking land with these vast resources, unlimited resources, to pay attorneys and to tie people up in court, to take this land, that's not freedom, folks. It's private land. And so as I was talking with Glenn earlier, you know, the Department of Ecology, that's the big issue. These guys are writing rules at the same pace, but only at the state level. And they have bureaucrats specifically dedicated to do this. And folks, you can't keep up with that. I can't keep up with that. We're trying to live our own lives. And here they are writing these rules that rob you of the use of your property, even without compensation. And that's the most egregious part. They can say you need to have 150-foot setback from a stream. You need to build fences. You need to do this. You need to do that. You can't use this part of your property. That's tyranny. This isn't the king's forest. This is private land. And the fact is that private land has been better managed than public land. And let me give you a case in point with timber industry-owned land. You will have wildfires start on timber industry-owned land, and they will be put out almost immediately because they have roads in there and also because they have thinned out all the fuel load from those forests. They've gotten rid of all the slag. They've taken it all out, and so the fires aren't as destructive. They can't burn as hot or as slowly through there. They actually race through, and it doesn't harm the trees. Now, here's an interesting statistic, and this is for all the environmentalists, friends that you may have out there. Right now, Washington emits about 92 million tons of CO2 per year. Okay? And that's what the global warming alarmists are really worried about. 92 million tons in Washington state. Now, we're one of the lowest in the world. We're one of the greenest states in the entire country. That aside, 92 million tons of CO2. During the wildfires last year, 24 million tons of CO2 was released from the wildfires alone. Now, the governor has a proposal to reduce carbon emissions by 18 million over 18 years, so a million a year. We had 24 million in 1 year. The greatest single thing we could do to reduce our carbon footprint is to actually manage our forests. And yes, that means logging them. And it means building roads into them. And if you see what happens, you will have fires that start on public land not be put out, and they will race toward private land and stop at the private land. Now, sometimes they don't. But you'll see a lot of times there where there are fire breaks on private land, that fire stops. And that, to me, is why it is so important to shrink the control of organizations, I should say agencies, like the BLM and like the Department of Ecology, because what they're doing is actually fostering the destruction of land, period. Taking away the productivity of that same land. Could you imagine if those forests had been logged, how many jobs that would be?
Matt, I'm back with you here.
Oh, perfect. Well, I mean, imagine that. And Glenn, that's a question for you. How many jobs would that be if we'd manage our forests correctly? Got DOE out of the way.
Well,
DNR,
and not,
BLM.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And especially, not only would we have a lot more jobs, but you'd also have a lot more prosperity, especially in these rural communities. And frankly, a lot more money for school construction, since the DNR land, largely that timber is the revenue that they get from selling that timber is actually used to fund school construction projects.
Well, it's amazing. So before the Department of Ecology cut us off there and completely crashed the system on both ends.
Well, either that or Inslee wasn't too happy with the commentary there. I couldn't tell which.
Probably. Yeah. Well, yeah. You were talking about the fact that the DOE actually celebrates the growth of their own agency and the growth of the bureaucracy. And that, yeah. This is typical. It's not like this is an anomaly.
Right. Yeah, and that's right. I mean, their public affairs officer would never say that. But I think an agency oftentimes, if you listen to what they actually do, pay attention to what they do and how they what they actually celebrate, you'll find that every now and then, they, without thinking about it, they let their guard down. And in this case, it's a very obvious big graph they put in their lobby. I'm waiting for the day they remove it because I keep beating them up about this. But you know, that's their priority. And I think sometimes that's one of those things that we have to remember. We try to argue with these agencies about this policy or that policy being better for the environment. And really have to put yourself in the mind of the bureaucrat. They don't really care about the environment. It's about power, money, and control. The thing that terrorizes them the most is having their budget shrink. When you read their emails, as I have with lots of records requests over the years, you'll see that they get the most concerned about having their budget threatened by 1%, you know, or some, you know, minor change. They'll spend an amazing amount of time justifying their budget or trying to figure out how they can influence the legislators to not reduce their budget. And they will spend far less time being concerned about any real-world pollution issues. And I think that's an important thing to remember. It's for the agencies, they exist to perpetuate themselves, not really to help us.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that brings us to the next thing. You have done a lot of digging, a lot of research. What are the top three abuses that you found, and how have whistleblowers played into that, you know, being so important in those things? Because I think people need to understand this corruption is real. It just isn't oftentimes exposed because people are afraid of their own jobs being lost.
Correct. Yeah, whistleblowers play an important role, and I think this is one thing to remember. I spend plenty of time beating up on these agencies, but at the end of the day, even at the Department of Ecology, there are good people that work there. In fact, I would say there's probably the majority of people that work, even at the Department of Ecology, might be a lower percentage than other agencies, but even at the Department of Ecology, there are good people who work there who really go to work every day trying to do their job. They do care about their job. A lot of times it doesn't have anything to do with ecology. It might be just keeping the computers running or cleaning the building or whatever it is. And they see a lot going on around them that disgust them or that concern them, but they are terrified about exposing what's happening because they don't want to lose their job. They don't want to be retaliated against. They're fully aware that the whistleblower laws that are on the books really won't protect them if they start to expose things. And, you know, the Department of Ecology specifically has a lot of real interesting problems with it. And I would say when you look at corruption, a lot of times what we would see as immoral or dishonest, and we would say, boy, that they shouldn't be doing that. Just because it's immoral and dishonest and wrong doesn't mean it's actually illegal. Sometimes these guys find ways of doing things that are bad, but they're not necessarily illegal. And I think that the majority of the time, that's going to be the type of thing that we find. The raw corruption where somebody's getting paid cash under the table, I think, is very difficult to uncover. And the only way that we're going to generally be able to do that is if people who are on the inside are willing to basically expose that truth on the outside. And that takes a lot more time and energy, and that's why I started doing a lot more aggressive whistleblower recruitment, because my experience has been that when we can find these guys and give them a sense of security that we're going to not reveal who they are. We're just going to go after the bad guys. We're going to expose the truth, not expose where we're finding this information. I think that that's our path from the inside to really start to expose this stuff. And it's not an easy process to go through, because if you try to recruit whistleblowers, you'll find that you get all kinds of people that come to you, and not all of them are actually honest or accurate. But there are plenty who are. You just have to kind of sort through them and validate. You can't just take anybody's word for it. You have to get the facts and get information and documents to support what they say. And that's kind of a laborious process, but it is worth going through.
So let's talk about some of the whistleblowers and what they've come out with. I mean, you've had a couple big deals where you've actually changed policy dramatically, rooted out a little bit of corruption. Give your two favorite.
Well, the one favorite was the one you actually helped a lot with, as well as Senator Patton on the other side of the legislature there, and that was with the electronic home monitoring. reform, which initially began with a whistleblower who was basically drummed out of the Whatcom County Sheriff's Office, and he had uncovered corruption called buying time off the clock with these businesses that were supposed to be monitoring criminals, and instead they were being bribed to not monitor the criminals. And Paul Murphy was his name. And when Paul Murphy originally contacted me, you know, I almost thought it was just a disgruntled former employee, you know, and didn't pay as much attention, but he had evidence to back up what he said. And I drove up there many times. I went and double-checked the court records, and we were able to validate that his concern was true. And, you know, that, as you were familiar, because you were there right from the beginning on that whole process, that took us a couple of years, but I think that was a victory. We were able to change state law in 2 years and actually get the governor to sign that bill to reform electronic home monitoring. Not a perfect reform, like you said. I mean, you almost never get perfection, but it's certainly a bigger improvement over what it was before. And that was a classic case of a whistleblower, of a successful one, of a whistleblower coming forward and actually making a difference.
That was the most substantive reform, I think, in about 20 years, if I recall correctly. But one of the interesting parts about that is, after that whistleblower came forward, we posted on social media about whistleblowers and who they could contact, and right. Facebook banned it. And yeah. Then we had to put it up through proxy sites and people, and then all of a sudden it went viral after that because Facebook tried to censor us putting out something about whistleblowers. I found that fascinating.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, absolutely. And what was interesting, too, about that was that was the article that I had put up to request whistleblowers. That was when I was still working at the Freedom Foundation. And I did have a number of people just off that Facebook post alone who contacted me as whistleblowers. His was the one that actually produced a reform all the way to the governor's office. Another one that had come forward around the same time that caused a stir, but I'm not sure that they fixed the policy yet, had to do with in the Department of the DSHS, where they were basically they were finding so much Medicare fraud that it was making the managers look bad. And so the manager's solution was to pretend like it didn't happen and just say that they were all okay and just clear the cases like it never happened. And that was a case that got exposed as well during that time.
Well, how about on the property rights side? I mean, do you have any favorite exposing of DOE that you could share with the listeners?
Well, Ecology is always one of my favorite favorite agencies to look at there. I think one thing to look at with the Department of Ecology is this: they have what they call these voluntary cleanup sites. And a lot of people believe that Ecology's goal when they get these voluntary cleanup sites is to actually clean up the site. And the truth, unfortunately, when you dig into it, is that the majority of the cleanup sites that Ecology supposedly is in charge of or is managing never get cleaned. And in fact, we were only able to find a handful of them that were ever cleaned around the state, hundreds and hundreds of these sites. And they don't even... Their objective is not apparently to clean them up, but their objective is to keep it going as long as possible so they can keep the grant gravy train coming in or whoever they're getting to pay for it. And, that's just one of those classic stories people should be aware of, that the incentive system for these agencies is really all wrong. It's all set up to encourage them to never clean it up or at least just go as slow as possible. And it's something that people have to remember. You know, when we criticize Ecology, we're criticizing an agency that has no, it really has no goal to actually achieve to the solutions that they claim that they're trying to achieve. You know, better, cleaner air, cleaner water, cleaner environment. That's not the goal when you actually look at the actions they take. And I'll have to tell you, it's not universal across Ecology. There are some good groups within Ecology. Some of their science-focused teams, especially in their toxics department and in the Hanford cleanup site, not all of them are great, but there are a couple teams over there that I think, based on what I've read, seem to be really focused and they care about what they're doing. And even with internal employees that work there, they'll tell me that those groups of people are very unique within Ecology because they actually are science-based and they care about what they're doing. Unfortunately, throughout the rest of the agency, there's all kinds of problems. And, you know, one thing that people don't even notice as much, and where I get a lot of complaints from government workers, is that these aren't fun places to work oftentimes. Ecology just had somebody arrested there because one of their employees stole all their money out of their celebration fund. I guess you could, if you worked at Ecology, you could set aside a small amount of your paycheck, and then they would it would go into like these retirement parties or cakes for people when they retire, things like that. And you know, their controls are so great that the employee that was running it realized they could just run off with $17,000 and nobody even noticed. And she was right for quite a while until she did get arrested. So, I mean, you uncover all kinds of stuff that's hard to believe until you actually dig into it and you find out just what's going on there.
So let's talk about the property rights issue. A lot of stuff happening in Washington State right now. A lot of people saying, what can we possibly do? Where do you think the front lines are in this battle? And also, what do you think people can do to get involved to make it actually change?
Well, you know, the front lines in the battle at the end are really elections. You have to elect good people who understand what property rights are, who take it seriously, and realize that we have to restore them. They've been degraded substantially. We have those rights, but the government's been taking them away from us, and we haven't been able to exercise them the way that we should. The second thing, though, is if you want to get involved, the Citizens Alliance for Property Rights, you can find it online, caper.us, at caper.us. Please join. Spokane is a very active chapter. Depending on where your show is broadcast, there's chapters all around Washington State. Even if you don't have a chapter, you can join, and you can get involved. And, you know, there's power in numbers. There's strength in numbers. By us working together, we can oftentimes expose what's going on. It starts with oftentimes just understanding what's happening locally, and then it allows us to focus on the issues that we need to address. You know, obviously the Growth Management Act is a high priority for us to repeal or significantly reform the eminent domain abuse, asset forfeiture, civil forfeiture. There's all kinds of these different abuses that are occurring, and it oftentimes will appear overwhelming from the outside. But it's amazing how much can be done if you have good people in office who have people like us to support them, you know, and that's, we need more people to join CAPER and get involved and to help get your neighbors involved, and that's where I would encourage people to go first.
What, as far as young people are concerned, what do you think young people should be doing right now as well? I mean, the property rights issue, it seems like this is the one that, you know, is really kind of the catalyst for a lot of action, but also it's really a flashpoint as we're seeing, you know, what happened in Oregon, seeing what happened in Nevada, seeing what's happening at Turnbull Wildlife Refuge now in Washington State. So what can young people do to get involved? And then the second question, I guess, the follow-up to that is how do we prevent flashpoints? How do we roll the bureaucrats back and the bureaucracy back?
Well, I'll start with the second point first. The greatest weakness of bureaucracy is that it requires money. I don't know a single bureaucrat that'll work for free. And I do think that the approach of taking away their money where possible and substantial reform of the agencies is the only solution to rolling a lot of them back. I'm very supportive, and CAPER is as an organization as well, of transferring the public federal lands to the states. And that's not a total solution for property rights, but what it does do is it means that instead of having to argue with a bureaucrat 3,000 miles away who really doesn't care what's happening in your state, I get to argue with them in Olympia, which is a lot easier, despite the problems that we have there. It's still easier to argue with them in Olympia than it is to argue with them in D.C. about an issue. But, you know, young people have to realize that their future is substantially constrained by future opportunity and future prosperity for them in their lives. If they do not have the ability to enjoy property rights to its fullest that we really should have in this nation. And when those are taken away from us, piece by piece, law by law, ordinance by ordinance, they will find that it is not possible for them to be as prosperous as their parents or certainly their grandparents were. And that's a serious threat, I think, to our freedom and our liberties and just the human joy of life and prosperity. It gets taken away. And it's a very critical thing. And the smaller these agencies, the fewer agencies, the less agencies we have, the less likely it is that we're going to have conflict. And I think that that's really something I just, you know, at the federal level, we've got to have somebody in there who's willing to cut these agencies and eliminate a lot of them. I think a lot of them are totally unnecessary. And well, that takes a lot of backbone.
It's interesting. Ted Cruz, to several legislators throughout the West, personally vowed to return public land to the states.
Sure.
And also on top of that, to look at the enforcement that the BLM has been doing in some of the more egregious cases where they really didn't need to do what they did and they did it anyway, you know, where they right. could have done something through a court document or filing. And instead, they, you know, invade somebody's property and take their cows, for example. So I was impressed by that part of it. But the point, I think, is very valid, not just at the presidential level, but what about the governor and reducing the size of agencies in the state of Washington as well? And also, what could people do at the local level to really push back on some of these agencies? And I know you've used the Public Records Act to great effect in some cases as well.
Yep, I think that the Public Records Act is one of the greatest tools that activists can have in the state to actually expose what's going on. And, you know, that's such an important thing. I think we forget about this sometimes. Our ability, especially with social media and with the internet the way it is today, we have the ability to expose the truth that people did not have before. And the media, I do not trust the mainstream media. They've largely sold their soul long ago. And so you can't count on your local newspaper to ever carry these stories. But if we do it ourselves and spread the word, I mean, you can put up these articles, get videos, document this, spread the word. And not, you know, you're not going to have one story that changes the world, but when there's story after story after story after 20 or 30 or 50 or 100 of these stories getting out there, you have the ability to influence how the apathetic majority see an issue. And I think that's something to always remember, expose, 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 and don't let up. It's not an instant gratification, two-hour movie sort of thing where the hero rides off in the sunset. This is a long grind, and we have to recognize that's what we're in. And we need to support people like you and other legislators who are willing to go in there and fight the good fight in Olympia and get more people like you in there so that we can keep that battle going and pay attention to local government because it starts locally.
Amen. It does start locally. If people want to find out more about you or get involved with the Citizens Alliance for Property Rights, where can they go?
They can go to caper.us, that's caper.us. And I also write some articles that don't always deal with property rights, but at wethegoverned.com and either place you can reach me.
You've got some great material on there. I love the one about the gophers. That
the gopher tax.
yes.
And believe me, it's not just the crazy guys on the west side, you know, the wet side of the state that are coming up with this. It may be starting there, but, Thurston County has invented a new $42,000 gopher tax that you'll have to pay before you can build homes in some areas of Thurston County. And that is U.S. Fish and Wildlife's dream to spread that concept everywhere across the state, not just in Thurston County.
Man, gopher tax, for real.
yeah, and of course they don't call it a gopher tax. It's they call it a gopher mitigation fund. But, I think that we have to take back control of our language, and the bureaucrats will spend lots of money, lots of time, trying to come up with nice-sounding language for what, in effect, is just a silly and goofy idea. And so it's a $42,000 gopher tax. You don't have to believe me. You can read the documents. I link to their source documents on their website, and you can read it for yourself.
It's just you can't make this stuff up. It's just absolutely amazing. Yeah. Well, I want to, in the last minute we've got, Citizens Alliance for Property Rights does something really cool that I love on property rights, and actually legislators can go and sign a pledge, and CAPER will actually give rankings and vote percentages based on how good candidates and elected officials do on property rights, and that's gained a lot of traction, but a lot of people don't know about it. Where can they go to find more information about that?
You will find that actually on our website as well, and I'm going to tell you, Matt, that we're going to be using that program because I think it's been underutilized by CAPR in the past. But the Citizens Alliance for Property Rights is going to emphasize that using that program tremendously over the next, as we move forward, because we are planning to rate every single legislator, every commissioner, every city councilman, every port commissioner that we can, that we possibly can in the state, so that there is a value placed on the decisions that they're making when they're in office, and that is going to stay with them for as long as they choose to be in politics. And it's up to us to hold our elected officials accountable. And I've found that it does change behavior.
Absolutely does. Well, keep up the great work, Glenn. I really appreciate everything you're doing. We'll have you back on Patriot Radio again soon. All right, my friend?
Yes, thank you very much. And thanks for all you do in Olympia.
Glenn Morgan, Citizens Alliance for Property Rights. You can post that up on the Patriot Radio Facebook page right now so you can link to it. And again, two great things. Not only can you get information from Citizens Alliance for Property Rights and Glenn Morgan and all the things that are going on and what you can do to be involved, but also they got this candidate ranking, and it's not just state elected officials. It can also extend to local elected officials as well and really give you a good picture of where somebody actually stands on property rights. Not what they say, what they actually are doing, which I know a lot of you out there find absolutely critical, especially when it comes election season. Well, this is Match A. Thank you to everybody for joining me on Patriot Radio today. Really appreciate, again, all of the emails and messages I've been getting, especially during this show. Just keep up the fight at the local level. Defend freedom locally wherever you can. Form your groups locally. If you don't have a Citizens Alliance for Property Rights chapter in your area, message me. I'll get you connected with them so you can start a chapter in your area. We can begin to fight back, because ultimately, I want to make sure that we are the greatest generation and that God blesses us in that way. God bless you.